This is a CNA podcast.
By now, the evidence is clear that rising global temperatures are creating devastating floods, rains, wildfires, and crop failures across the globe. You may think deserts might be spared the worst of the impacts of climate change, but the desert areas in Asia are experiencing deep changes too. And that spells trouble for Mongolia's traditional nomadic herders, who for generations have raised their animals in the Gobi Desert. My name's Jack Board, CNA's climate change correspondent, and this is a special edition of the Climate Conversations. This is the first episode of Asia's Great Climate Frontiers. Over the next few weeks, I'll be bringing you stories from around the continent, looking at precious ecosystems at risk. This week, I travel to Mongolia to meet a herding family struggling through drought in the country's increasingly dry south. Work starts before sunrise in the southern Gobi. Summer has already faded here, but the sky is still wide and bright ahead of the dark days of the looming colder months. It's freezing though in this desert region close to the border with China, and the temperature sits close to zero. I'm watching two herders, a married couple, round up their goats. As Nurgoy circles on a motorcycle, his wife Munktul wades through the animals with purpose. She eyes her target, a young buck, before launching into chase. Dust flies as the goats scramble. Within minutes, the chosen animal is captured ahead of its slaughter. It's a reluctant kill, but there will be meat for a while now for the couple and their two helpers. Life is simple and harsh, and it always has been in the near featureless expanse of the Gobi. But the past few years have tested the resilience of these proud, determined people. I'm struck by the simplicity and the starkness of life here. The couple's lives revolve around a traditional domed tent known as a gur. They sleep in a portable shipping container, and they drive a Toyota Prius, the new workhorse for herders who are always on the move. I've also spent the night in the container, sharing the small space with four others. The snoring was very loud. Later, sitting down with Nurgoy in the afternoon sun, he explains that he and his wife are actually strangers in this land. Their home is hundreds of kilometres away, deeper south. Over there, the conditions have become too difficult, and they made the choice nearly 2 years ago to abandon hundreds of animals and take what they could to more hopeful pastures north.
In the Gobi, it's difficult to be a herder. No rain and with too many mines. It's becoming difficult to herd animals. For the last 3 years, we haven't seen consistent rain here. We left our home last summer and now we are just migrating with our animals wherever there's vegetation. Desertification is everywhere. It's in my homeland, in Omnogovi and Dungovi. It's everywhere in the Gobi region. We're making it thanks to our animals. There's no other income we have.
Their new location doesn't offer a stable future either. Yet another move is on the cards. Looking around, I can see why. The pasture is parched. The Gobi isn't usually a lush grassland, but this is exceptionally dry. There are too many animals scouring for the little greenery peeking out of the crusted soil. This is how desertification happens. Desertification is where land degrades, becomes arid, and loses its fertility. It's now affecting more than 76% of Mongolia. That's an alarming statistic. When you think of deserts, what normally comes to mind is the sweeping, iconic sands. The Gobi is different. It's the sixth largest and fastest growing desert in the world. But much of it is not sand, but rocky terrain, making it a hostile environment for plants and wildlife. Grasslands that have supported nomadic herding for generations are being consumed. drought has become more regular in the Gobi, and heat stress will further weigh on water supplies. Climate change and human activity are both to blame. To understand the situation, I went back to the Mongolian capital city, Ulaanbaatar, to speak with the country's special envoy on climate change, Bachagalzam.
Mongolia has deserts and is a pretty arid place. So desertification means land that has changed from its previous condition. We don't count the areas that were already desert as being desertified. It's known that 40-something percent of Mongolia does not have plant growth. But areas that have been affected by desertification have increased. One of the reasons is because of climate change. Mongolia's climate has become drier. What does that mean? It means precipitation doesn't increase, but has decreased. And rainfall has changed. No more light rains that seep into the ground. We have heavy rainfall that breaks the soil and it evaporates quickly. So Mongolia is becoming drier. And as a result, desertification increases. Additionally, we say human involvement. Our population has grown. Under the previous political system, before the 1990s, the livestock population was capped at around 20 million. But now it has grown to 70 to 90 million. Also, mining has increased. Roads have increased, and they are not proper roads. And all of this, and with the onset of climate change, Mongolia's land is seeing increased desertification. Without the proper control of animal numbers, we don't have enough pasture to support all these animals. And there's the issue of having enough water sources. So, with the onset of climate change and with the increased human activity, Mongolia will not be able to sustain its traditional way of living, pastoral herding of animals. As pastoral herding becomes unsustainable, as the summers get hotter and pastures start to shrink up, what can people do for work if pastoral herding goes away?
Pastoral herding going away? It seems like such a fundamental shift to the way people live here in Mongolia. But the science points to difficult days ahead. Already, experts see a growing rift between herders and their cultural bonds with the land. It's a situation already affecting Mungthul. I sat with her in the family's communal gur as she prepared tea using fresh milk from her goats. I wondered about the couple's children. One's in the capital at university, the other younger two are at school, but in town and separated from their parents. She started to cry as she spoke about the situation. She knows that with her husband, they may be the last generation working this unforgiving landscape and feels the loss deeply.
None of our three kids wants to be a herder. These are very difficult times. How can a kid think it is okay to live in the countryside when they have seen drought for two consecutive years and the constant moving? Maybe if the kids were in their homeland, their minds might have been different. I have been herding animals since the sixth grade, and because of that, I believe I can't be who I am without herding.
The couple will stay on for now, searching for a better place for themselves and their animals. They'll look for more plentiful grasslands, knowing they will be unwelcome there, and that the desert will be pursuing them like a shadow. I wondered about the possible solutions in Mongolia. Of course, global action on climate change can help to slow down or prevent the onset of the impacts being felt in the Gobi. But changing the trajectory of local lives will require more than that. I went to find a forest in the desert. The greenery appears like an oddity in the distance. In the featureless expanse of the southern Gobi, this is a literal oasis. There's nothing out here to cast a shadow, but the sun and skulls of fallen livestock. And for the past two decades or so, the growing forest of a man named Baradud Stemchik. I'm certain that no plant could grow out here in the Rocky Plains, at least not without dedicated effort. The 82-year-old moved to this land in 1992 with a plan to plant vegetables to sell at a local market. It's since been symbolic of an admirable pursuit to green Mongolia.
In that spot, you can't just plant vegetables as it's so windy, so I needed cover from the elements. That's why I planted trees and made the trees cover for the vegetables I planted. The first year was difficult. It was a windy and sandy year. But in the second year, the trees were tall enough to protect my vegetables. I became a believer in trees and started to love them. And people started to notice and asked me to give them trees as well. My field is directly in the path of the sandstorms that begin in the South Gobi. The yellow sandstorms that reach America and go through Japan start here. The ravine that I'm in the winter it reaches minus 30 degrees, and in the summer it reaches plus 30. Two extremes, one very cold and one very hot. So if a tree is growing there, it proves a tree can grow anywhere. From Ulaanbaatar to the eastern provinces, my trees are growing. In total, I helped plant over 400,000 trees over three decades. I like to believe that 300,000 of them are still growing. So all that remains is to incentivize people who plant trees on their own. If you provide strong incentives and promote them, people will start planting trees on their own. The only way to protect from desertification is to plant trees.
Baradutz's health now means it's increasingly difficult for him to travel to his desert oasis to tend to the trees. His grandson now cares for the forest, which has become a healthy business for the family. But he remains an active advocate for adopting a green thumb attitude in the middle of the desert. I'm leaving Mongolia with a small feeling of hope. People are trying to leave their land in better shape for future generations. But driving through what seems like an endless emptiness, I'm struck by the scale of the challenges ahead. If anyone can withstand them, no doubt it'll be the tough people of Mongolia. This has been Jack Board. Thank you for listening to this special episode of The Climate Conversations. The team behind this podcast are Crispina Robert, Jacqueline Chan, Daniel Lee, Joanne Chan, and Tiffany Ng.